And now, sports and other stuff. The Closers. Join the talk now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
You know, we'll see where the next couple of weeks brings us and how we're able to put all the pieces together.
Let's look and at this week moving forward on handling that in a more mature way.
Didi Gregorius makes Yankee fans euphorious. The Yankees win.
You know, our bullpen was remarkable tonight.
The evaluation skills of everybody's quarterbacks is really bad.
Hopefully, you know, we're finding our rhythm through the preparation process.
I'm just focused on what I need to do and take care of my job.
I think it's a two-way street. I think it takes everyone.
But I just think that, you know, this is causing a distraction that none of us really need.
I think he needs to play better. I think we need to play better around him.
We're just working hard to find our rhythm to maximize our preparation.
I really care about the wins and losses and not, you know, when we play or how we play.
So I look into the big picture of where we're at right now.
I just felt like, you know, he was kind of ready for the next step.
In-helmet perspective and the things we present to him so we can find consistency in our play.
If we keep throwing crap out there and not doing what we're supposed to do, then it's going to be what it's been the last 2 weeks.
And maybe the best team win.
Oh, man. Welcome in hour number two, our opening montage. Head coach Robin Benchton, head coach Barry Odom in there as well, being 0-3 versus adversity. WFAN, Yankees win the... You know the rest of it. Joe Girardi, Adam Gase, Mike Tomlin, Tom Brady, Kyle Shanahan, Ben Roethlisberger, courtesy of 93.7 The Fan. And then we played a little volleyball. Kyle Shanahan, Mike Tomlin, Tom Brady, Kyle Shanahan, John Fox, Mike Tomlin, Adam Gase, and Tom Brady with our little opening montage. So that's what we've got there. And as we get ready to open up hour number two, we will do so with our next guest, Bill Conley from Rock M Nation. And how are you? Happy birthday, man. I didn't know you're 10 years old. Congratulations.
That's right. I am a little more than 10, but Rock M Nation is 10 years old today, and that's a happy occasion.
Okay. Well, and very interesting that we go through a lot of this stuff every year, and I think you've been on with us for a long, long time. We're coming up nigh on our 10-year anniversary, I think, as well, for this show. But it's an interesting time as it's so reactionary. I mean, I'm listening through some of the shows the last couple of days, Bill, and you've got people calling in on different programs, whether it is Will Muschamp at South Carolina or, you know, Barry Odom here at Missouri or wherever it is, 2 years, is it time for the guy to go? So which program, as you look across the collegiate landscape, and it doesn't have to be SEC, it can be wherever, which program has the farthest to go and the least amount of time to get there?
Wow, that's a good one. Honestly, as weird as it sounds, I almost feel like it's Tennessee. You know, it's really, or maybe Arizona State. Maybe that's a good one too. Right? It's a weird time because you do have a lot of first and second year guys. it's really hard to get fired before your third year, but they're hitting certain depths that, you know, it does make you wonder what you know, if they're going to fall a little further and end up getting tossed here. But I think, you know, overall, I think Butch Jones is in a really, really tough spot right now, just in terms of he's been there more than 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he just keeps kind of missing out on opportunities, saying things to the press that don't really ring well within the press. So the press isn't really supporting him all that much. And so I do think it's kind of he's in a really tough spot right now. He could go 7-5, which before Butch Jones was actually about the best Tennessee had done since they got rid of Phil Fulmer. And it's still going to be kind of hard for him to survive, I think. And there are some others, obviously. David Beatty of Kansas, obviously, is in a very good ground, although he's at least in his third year. Mike Riley of Nebraska in his third year. But, I mean, as far as it pertains to Missouri, there's clearly some work to be done here for Barry Odom as well.
You're getting a third of the way into the season as your projections and your numbers come together all through study hall and everywhere else where you work on that kind of stuff through the SB Nation landscape. Is there a team out there or maybe a couple who have just chucked your numbers out and said, no, this is where we're completely a different monster than what Bill C said we were or the numbers thought we were going to be? Are there a couple, you know, outliers out there that have made you sit up and take notice?
Well, certainly on the, you know, I phase out my preseason projections very slowly because, you know, small samples do really crazy things to our eyeballs, basically, and those stable out the projections nicely. And, I mean, my picks have done okay enough to justify it, I would say. But when the projections miss on a team, then they just continue to miss on a team for a while. Baylor is obviously one. Took them a while to start sinking because they were projected wherever they were, top 30 somewhere, and they're clearly not a top 30 team. LSU is clearly not a top 10 team, and they're starting to fall slowly as well. You still have a couple oddities like that. And on the other side, my goodness, have UCF and Miami looked good so far. But, you know, Miami was merely a top 20 or 25 projected team. So they're not quite as high as they could be. And UCF, who has dominated some otherwise really interesting teams in Maryland and Memphis, they destroyed those teams. They're still wherever they are in the 40s or 50s or something, just based on the fact that they were projected really low because they went 0-12 two years ago. So, you know, there are certainly some outliers, but for the most part, I don't think that many teams are too far away from what we expected. Missouri's actually, you know, on the lesser list there. But yeah, it's been an interesting time for the Miami, for the Florida-based schools at least, a good interesting kind.
Well, unless you're, you know, a Florida Gator fan, in which case you're thinking, good God, is Jim McElwain ever going to win something besides by a single score? Where he's what
the
is he
unfireable,
now?
The unfireable, yeah. Jim McElwain. Everybody's tired of him, wants him to go. He won't lose.
Yeah, what is he? 11-1 now in scores decided by a single. Single possession.
Yeah, that probably isn't going to be maintained, but it is for now.
Well, it's, you know, you're not doing that all over one year. That's a career's worth of work right down there in Gatorland. NCAA Division I Council are proposing new legislation that will require all FBS schools to designate 30 people who will be primarily responsible for on-campus recruiting, and that would include up to 10 coaches, assistant coaches, 4 graduate assistants in that mix. Is this a good thing for college football, as it seems like the NCAA is trying to winnow the opportunity for nefarious activity?
I mean, I don't know what it's going to do exactly, but yeah, I mean, it's clearly that kind of attempt. They're trying to rein it in. They know it's a big mess, and since they refuse to do anything about the definition of amateurism, since they're using the same one they generated 6 decades ago and billions of dollars of revenue ago, this is really the only thing they've got to try to winnow that down and figure out and try to control some of the outside influence and whatnot. So whatever. I mean, this is, you know, you're tying your hand behind your back and then trying to fix the problem with one hand is what you're going to get.
Bill Connelly, Rocky.
That was a weird analogy, I realized, but it was the best I could do.
Okay. Well, it just seemed a weird rule as well, but
it's going to be weird when you leave the most obvious solution off the table. Your solutions aren't going to be very intuitive necessarily.
Okay, let's revisit what organization we're talking about here.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Bill Connelly, Rockham Nation, SB Family of Nations. You can find him on Twitter at @SBN_BillC. There were some surprises this past weekend, not the least of which was Washington at home, upending USC 30-27. Who got more shine out of that one, Coach Leach with his postgame comments, or the shine being rubbed off of that lovely little Trojan helmet?
Yeah, I mean, Washington State's quite good this year. They were a little lucky, too, from a turnover perspective. Like, that, you know, you toss that, all the players in that game up in the air and they land differently. USC wins more often than not, I think. But regardless, this is a really solid Washington State program, and it did a lot to enhance both division races. I still think USC wins the South pretty comfortably, but it took away a little of their margin for error. Now, if they suffer an upset against, you know, a Utah or somebody like that, we might actually have a race instead of what I kind of assumed was a 3-month-long victory march there. But then in the North now, you've got Washington, who's clearly quite good. You still got Stanford, and then you've also got Washington State. You've got Oregon, who was looking really interesting, and then in the last 2 weeks managed to lose to Arizona State and then beat a decent Cal team while losing their quarterback and maybe their running back. So they're kind of in an odd spot right now. But you've got a really interesting division there developing, and you know, that's good for November. It's certainly good for Mike Leach especially, but I think it's just going to be good for having a lot of watchable, interesting, relevant games into November.
Okay, enough of the hand egg for a moment. U.S. men's national team.
What are you doing?
U.S. men's national team. They come. Do they
hijack?
Yep.
Hijack.
Do they get out of these two hex games with a wild card berth or with a World Cup berth?
I think we're looking firmly at the whatever you call it, the qualifier, the extra qualifier game.
Mm-hmm, the play-in game, okay.
Yeah, I think that's what you're looking at right now. They were talking about, you know, how, you know, you're up 1-0. You know, that's a good win, but maybe keep trying to floor to get the second goal to help the goal differential and whatnot. I don't see that happening. I don't think this team is good enough to win any match by more than a goal right now. But let's start there. Let's start with win a match and doing so in reasonably comfortable fashion. It was a really odd, a little bit of a confusing lineup that was selected or roster that was selected for this one. But yes, I say they do end up qualifying, but they have to go through the little play-in match to do it.
Oh, all right, I'm back. let's wrap this up, shall we, with our college football playoff top four. The four get in there. Let's start with this premise. Could I win an argument with you that Clemson should be ranked number one instead of Alabama based on body of work?
Oh, yeah, based on body of work, nobody has a better resume than Clemson. I don't think Clemson's as good a team as Alabama. But, yeah, if we're talking about a resume kind of thing, it's hard to select anybody but the team that's already beaten Auburn and Louisville and Virginia Tech. Those are three good teams. Maybe not the line is, you know, three top 15 teams. That's where they were when they played. They might not all be actual top 15 caliber teams, but that's kind of besides the point. It's a heck of a resume for 5 weeks into the season.
Okay, well, again, we will stipulate and not argue about Alabama and Clemson. 1-2 doesn't really matter the order on that one, but 3-4 right now, Oklahoma and Penn State. Are you okay with that, or is there a dark horse in the crystal ball of Bill Connelly that says, you know, they should be in the top four and not one of the other two teams?
Well, yeah, I mean, from if we're talking about who would get selected today, yeah, obviously Oklahoma, the road win over Ohio State is very big. Mm-hmm. And Penn State, I think, has as good a claim as anybody. Obviously, their resume is not that great, though. They've looked very good, but maybe Georgia has looked as good. You know, maybe Washington has looked as good. You know, they kind of limped through the Rutgers game, and everybody kind of stopped paying attention. They've looked great since then. So maybe they have earned a look in that regard. But I don't have any problem with 4 weeks in. I realize AP Top 25 right now is based a lot on the preseason polls.
Right.
But, I mean, I think you can make a case that those are the four best teams so far just based on the 2017 performance and bodies of work. I think you can make a case for that, too.
And real quickly, as we get ready to exit this segment, next segment we'll do a lot of Mizzou stuff, as exciting as that may seem for a lot of people. Miami's sitting there. They're ranked number 13. They're 3-0. How much have they been hurt by the Hurricanes and having those first couple of games canceled, and folks look at them kind of Johnny come latelys right now?
Yeah, it's a little weird. I mean, mm-hmm. it's an odd situation to be in when you've had some teams play five games and some play three. Some have played, you know, Clemson has played many good teams, and others are into October having really not played anybody at all. So as far as the effect it will have, it is kind of hard to say, I guess. But if nothing else, I mean, there are certainly plenty of – the longer you stay undefeated moving forward, the more relevant all your remaining games end up being, because you do end up just by virtue of not losing, you do end up moving pretty far up as other teams lose. So I don't – you know, being that we're not going to have a playoff ranking for another month, I would say that by the time that rolls around, it's not – we won't be talking about that anymore. It's definitely kind of an oddity early on, though.
Yep. Bill Connelly, Rock M Nation, SB Family of Nations. We've got time to talk. Well, we have time to talk Mizzou stuff. Do you have time to talk Mizzou stuff?
Let's do it.
The Closers. Join the talk now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
Hey, welcome back to The Closers here alongside Jay Sparks. I'm George Young, and happy to be rejoined by Bill Connelly from Rock M Nation. It is game week for this Missouri Tiger football team. Bill, thanks for sticking and staying. I do appreciate it. As we focus now on this Missouri Tiger football team, 1-3, coming off a bye week. There are the possibilities of a lot of changes. We can get into that, but let me start off with this. I visited with the analyst for the Kentucky Wildcat Radio Network earlier today. We'll run that tomorrow here on the show. But Jeff Pecoro, when we were kind of, you know, previewing both sides and getting ready to the item list of the things to talk about, he asked me this question: how did you guys get so bad? So I will ask you this question, the same question he asked me: how did Missouri get to this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard question to answer until we know that rock bottom has been hit. Let's put it that way. You know, 2-3 weeks ago before the Purdue game, I would have had one answer. A week later, I'd have had a different answer. Mm-hmm. The week, you know, it's a weird place to be in, but there's no question that some combination of, you know, a disturbance in continuity that was such a big thing for Missouri for such a long period of time, to have that, just that continuity in terms of the head coach, in terms of the staff, in terms of the type of player, et cetera, et cetera. I think that built a certain level of stability into the program that even if Barry Odom was seen as something of a continuity hire, which, I mean, he made a lot of changes right at the start, but I mean, I think that was part of the draw. Even with that relative continuity, wasn't going to be able to avoid any sort of disruption over the course of a couple of years. And also, you know, when you don't land a bunch of five stars, when you're relying on finding the right three-star guys and developing them really well, you know, you always run the risk of kind of a dry spell, so to speak. And I think maybe Missouri's encountering a little bit of that. Honestly, though, and I wrote this last week, I think the most disturbing part of this right now, and again, there are 8 games left here. This could still go in a lot of different directions. But right now, you know, the biggest problem I've got with this team 4 weeks in is I don't know who's gotten better since last year. And that's a, you know, developmental side, because part of the thing about signing the right 3-star guys is been developing them and turning some of them into 4-stars. And I don't know who's gotten better. And that's very disturbing. And that's the thing that needs to change pretty significantly in these coming weeks.
Well, and you mentioned the continuity with the previous staff. Gary Pinkel had a staff that stuck with him for 15, mm-hmm. 20 years before they would finally move on. I mean, Dave Steckel took a pay cut to go down to Missouri State and become their head coach for football because he always wanted to be a head coach. But that part aside, that was a coaching regime that, Bill, that took threes and fours and or twos and threes and made them threes and fours and occasionally would take that three and make them a five. Is this staff in 2 years, are they any good at developing product, or is this a group that needs to be spoon-fed fours and fives in order to make it work?
Well, right. I mean, that's kind of what it looks like right now, is that it's not a program, but whatever changes were made, whatever coaches were brought in, like the pieces have not in any way aligned. I mean, we know that a lot of these guys have been good coaches elsewhere. A couple of them were good coaches for Gary Pinkel, and others were successful coaches elsewhere, but it just hasn't clicked in a way that you can see any sort of product emerging. And again, you're only 16 games into the Barry Odom era. And it's really, I catch myself because I want to step back and acknowledge that this has time to change. Even if this is Barry Odom's last year, he's got 8 more games to start turning things around and change that fate, so to speak. But I mean, yeah, that's what I started to realize after the Purdue game. You think about the guys that Odom inherited at the beginning of last year that we thought were going to be major difference makers over the coming years. Who's better than they were at the beginning of last year? When you think about Anthony Sherrills and Thomas Wilson in the back to Drew Locke in the front of the offense, these guys don't seem to – we hear that they are improving. We hear about them becoming better leaders. It just has – none of it has translated onto the field yet.
Bill, a lot has been – people have started noticing that the SEC at the head coaching level – really over the last 5-7 years has gone the way of recruiters because the SEC was so fertile and because they were seeing the success on the field and the recruits wanted to come there. So these recruiters got put in these head coaching positions. Now you're seeing the foundations maybe built on sand a little bit. What does the SEC do? Is there going to be a new generation of coaching chop coaches being hired with this next? Is there going to be a pendulum swing with the next set of hires in the SEC?
I mean, it's an opportunity for a swing. Let's put it that way. And it'll depend on what the athletic structures do. I do think this is where we were talking about panic and quick moves and panic moves and all that in the last segment. This is where this comes back to bite you, because everybody wants the, you know, I think the panic, so to speak, has been increased by Nick Saban's sustained success. We've gotten Sabanized, so to speak, and everybody's trying to fight that. And so they aim super high, and if the payoff isn't immediate, we start to freak out a little bit, and you see the coaches kind of melting down, so to speak. You almost saw that with Gus Malzahn last year. He's kind of stabilized and survived, but Kevin Sumlin is on the hot seat every single year for only going 8-5 in a really tough division. Brett Bielema's product has kind of slipped over the last year, but he's under pressure for only having winning seasons. I think we're all trying to be Alabama, and we're all reacting to Alabama in a really weird way, and it made athletic directors insecure. It had coaches insecure, and that there's no sense of stability or long-term stability here that's really backfired on the conference to a certain degree. And that also goes to the type of hire, whether it's a recruiter, whether it's a Saban clone, so to speak. Obviously, Kirby Smart might be actually pulling it off in Georgia, but he'd be the first. Jim McElwain, part of the draw for him at Florida was he's a Saban assistant. Gus Malzahn hired a former Saban assistant in Kevin Steele. You know, we've seen that a lot of places. Muschamp, a lot of guys with Saban ties getting certain jobs that maybe the fact that they had Saban on the resume bumped them a little higher than they otherwise would have been.
Bill Conley, Rock'em Nation, SB Family of Nations. Now let's look at the weekend opponent for this Missouri Tiger team. It is a cohabitation of opponents. It is adversity and the Kentucky Wildcats. Which does Missouri have a better shot at overcoming before we start breaking this down?
Well, Kentucky's not very good. I think that's, you know, both the
intriguing
part and the discouraging part about this is if a good Missouri team, if a decent Missouri team, a put-together team like the one that we saw, you know, last three quarters against Missouri State, first quarter, quarter and a half against South Carolina, if that team takes the field, Kentucky is very vulnerable. Some of the things we thought Kentucky was going to be very good at this year, number one, running the ball. They've been terrible at running the football. They put a lot of pressure on Steven Johnson to produce with his arm. He's completing a lot of safe passes, but not a whole lot downfield. Their offense in five games hasn't scored 30 points yet, which, you know, 28 points is kind of the average for college football these days. They haven't hit 28 points yet. They barely got by Eastern Michigan. They needed most of 60 minutes to put away Eastern Kentucky. This is just not a very good football team. They did put together a really nice performance against South Carolina and about two and a half quarters worth of performance against Florida. But for the good, there's been a bad. And run offense and pass defense, and there are just these things that Missouri could take advantage of if they're ready to. We just can't guarantee, we just can't count on Missouri being ready to take advantage of it.
Bill, I don't know, you know, obviously there's so many college football games played. You keep a finger on a lot of it, the pulse of it, but has a team ever had the opportunity that you know of kind of off the top of your head or could look into, but a team have the opportunity to start four straight weeks at home and a bye week in this right. current scheduling model and end up in such a precarious place as Mizzou? And then how does that translate to, like you said, he has eight games left, but now you've got eight straight games and so many of them on the road.
Yeah. Well, it's not good. I mean, I can't right off the top of my head say this or that happened, but it's a very, it does make it, when you talk about home road split, it does make it more precarious now. Now, I mean, I saw some of the players, you know, talking to the media this week, basically saying maybe getting away from home is a good thing at this point. And they might not be wrong, but you really do kind of have to, I think we know what the most likely scenario here is, and that's the team we saw for on average over 4 weeks, the one we see over eight. You just have to now, you know, just for your own sanity, you have to look at the outliers, the teams that did kind of flip things around all of a sudden. One of my favorites was that I liked writing about a few years ago was Rice. Back in 2012, David Bailiff, they started 2-6, and they were just looking really, really bad. It was the year they were supposed to move forward, and it wasn't happening. Bailiff was all but fired, and then they won 6 of 7 to end the year. They won, they went 10-4 the next year, won Conference USA. You have to look for those outlier cases to make yourself feel assured right now, and that's, I mean, it's comforting to know those cases do exist, but that's what you have to look for, because typically we kind of know what's coming if they don't turn things around, and the odds aren't great that they turn it around.
Bill Conley, Rock'em Nation, SB Family of Nations. Missouri football will move to 2 wins if they can do what against the Kentucky Wildcats Saturday night?
I think the biggest thing is stopping the run. Kentucky really has been, you know, confusingly bad at it. They still got Benny Snell. Benny Snell's not even averaging 4 yards per carry, I don't think. It's been a really strangely inefficient offense. I thought that was going to be a strength of theirs this year. The defense hasn't turned around enough to pull it off, but I mean, they're used to competitive situations. Obviously, there's like every single game they play in is decided in the fourth quarter, good or bad. But, you know, that's, I think, the biggest thing. Missouri should be able to find enough offense if they're not bailing Kentucky out and letting them run the ball for the first time in a while. So that's the biggest thing. And Missouri's run defense has been confusingly bad. And the pass defense has been maybe not quite as confusingly bad, but bad. And so there's plenty of issues here. But I would say if you stop the run, you got to feel reasonably good about your chance.
All right. Bill Connelly, Rock M Nation, SB Family of Nations. It was a bye week last week, but if I had set the over-under at 1.5, you would have had to take the over at 2 as the Missouri Tigers lose Demetrius Mason, and they also lose a recruit last weekend. This time, I am setting the over-under. Missouri and at Kentucky for Missouri, 15.5 points for the Tigers.
Oof. I was hoping you'd be 20 or more so I could definitely go under and feel good about it. But, you know, I've been wrong a few times, and if I'm going to be wrong again, I'm going to be wrong optimistically. So I'll say over.
So take any over is Bill Connelly from Rockin'.
I've been wrong over and under.
Sunshine. Sunshine.
That's right.
Forsooth, what is that blowing up my skirt? Why, it's smoke. Bill Connelly, Rock M Nation, thank you much for the time, man. I really do appreciate it, and happy 10th birthday to you and the rest of the crew over there at Rock M.
I owe a lot to this site, and it's crazy to think it's been around for 10 years.
Yeah, man, pretty soon it'll get a learner's permit, and then it can be your designated driver.
Oh, actually, that's a good thing. It owes Missouri fans that much, I would say.
All right. Look for that moment when Rock M turns 16 and they can be your designated driver. Bill, thank you for the time, man. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
Thank you.
You are very welcome. That is Bill Connelly from Rock M Nation. We'll be right back. More of the closers right after this.
The closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
And welcome back to the closers here alongside Chase Sparks. I'm George Young, and the St. Louis Blues take to the ice tonight. They will do it at a broadcaster's favorite location, especially if they are a fan of popping peas. They will take on the Pittsburgh Penguins at PPG Paints Arena in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Chris Raby from KMOX joining us now. And, man, that is a mouthful of popped peas for the preview tonight. But what do you look for, generally speaking, from this St. Louis Blues club? I mean, people will say, yeah, they'll probably get to the playoffs. They'll have to claw and scratch their way in. But is that just the first step in your kind of full year now with Mike Yao?
Well, I think it goes before that. Good to be with you guys. I think that, you know, with all the injuries that have hit the Blues, they really need to weather the storm over the first month. They've got 7 of 9 on the road and to open the season in a road-heavy schedule. Very early on, including, you know, after coming home to take on Dallas this Saturday, back-to-back games against the Islanders and Rangers to kick off a trip next week. And, you know, you've got to do it without some guys. The injury to Robbie Fabbri, obviously devastating, not just for the club, but for him personally. You'll get a couple of guys back soon, and Steen and Bomeister, but, you know, Patrick Berglund won't be around until maybe the start of the new year, so you're going to need to weather the storm in a conference that is obviously very tough and in a division that, you know, we've talked about the last few years is, in my opinion, the best in hockey, especially with some of the improvements that teams have made this year. You're going to need to be able to get contributions from some guys that you didn't necessarily expect at the beginning of camp. It's kind of the story that we dealt with down the stretch last year. Guys like Ivan Barbashev and Magnus Pearvey and Dmitry Yashkin, and now, you know, newcomer Oscar Sundquist and Tage Thompson and Vince Dunn, who made the team. Chris Thorburn, who's going to fill the role of Ryan Reeves. You're going to need to get contributions from those guys and deal with some of the injuries that you've sustained. If you can do that, and if you can keep your head above water and keep pace, I think, at the conference and in the division until you start to get some guys back, Steen and Bomeister in the short term, then Berglund, hopefully around January, and keep everybody else healthy, then I think you'll be in good shape. But, you know, you use the term scratch and claw. We saw how hard it was for the Blues to get back into the playoff picture last year after they fell behind the eight ball, and it really took a just fantastic last couple of months and really the best run of any team in the NHL down the stretch to get in. So you don't want to put yourself in that position, you know, when we turn the calendar to 2018.
Chris, as you look at this team as from a kind of a preview standpoint and get ready for this 2017-2018 season for the Blues, you know, you start at goal, not a lot of competition. Jake Allen enters as the man, and there's some depth behind him, but not really pushing him so much. How much of this Blues season comes down to Jake Allen kind of standing on his head and being that, you know, top 5, top 10 goalie that he can be?
Well, I don't think he needs to stand on his head. I don't think he is the guy that we saw the last month of the season and in the first round of the playoffs, a 969-70 save percentage, because I think that would be hard to replicate over the course of the year. But I also don't think he's the guy that we saw struggle last year. I think that, you know, he obviously had issues, and for a time the club sent him home, and they kind of turned things over to Carter Hutton. But when Jake got back on track, he was great. And I think a lot of that has to do with not just Jake, but with what the club was able to do defensively when Mike Yeo took over. When Jake was struggling, and in December and January, for stretches, they were giving up a lot of bad chances, bad red zone chances, bad chances in the middle of the ice. You know, when you leave NHL players, especially skilled players, wide open, when you give up out-of-man rushes, that's going to make it really, really tough on your goaltender. And I'm sure Jake would say that, you know, he could have been better during that stretch. But, you know, I think as the defense got better and the Blues shored some things up in the middle of the ice, Jake and also Carter Hutton reaped the benefit. So I expect that this year. I think especially when Jay Bouwmeester comes back, the Blues are really, really excited about their defensemen, especially if, you know, Carl Gunnarsson and Robert Bortuzzo is your third pairing. They had Bouwmeester skating with Colton Parayko on the second pairing, which should take a little pressure off him, and then Edmondson with Petrangelo. So, you know, I think if you get better play defensively and you get what you got the second half of last season defensively, then, you know, Jake will be very, very good. And the reason that there really isn't competition is because they decided a couple of summers ago when they traded Brian Elliott to the Calgary Flames that Jake was their guy. They signed him to the extension. They brought in Carter Hutton, who's been a very, very good backup goaltender. And this is Jake's team. And by the way, that pick that they got for Brian Elliott turned into Jordan Kyrou, who lit up the scoring charts everywhere he played over the last 12 months and made a real impression in camp and in Traverse City. So we could see him at some point. But, you know, this is Jake's team. They've made that commitment moving forward. I think you're awfully excited about what you got from him when the games were the most important last year. And I think that's how they feel going into this year as well.
Chris Raby with us from KMOX Radio. You catch him on the Blues Radio game, both pregame, postgame, in-between periods, and a lot of good guests for those in-between periods. You've already talked a little bit about the whole blue line, the defense guys, and the loss of Bouwmeester is big. We're not really quite sure how long he's going to go, but a newcomer, Vince Dunn, what's his role going to be, and how does he fit in, maybe take some of that load?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be, I think, exciting to see both Vince Dunn and Tage Thompson, who made the club maybe a little unexpectedly, and see how they fit in. I think that for now, he'll probably, when he gets an opportunity, be asked to not do too much. And He was playing with Robert Bortuzzo, thought that he looked pretty good. You can do a pretty good job of managing those minutes, especially with Petrangelo, with Parayko, with Edmondson, with some of the workhorses that you have. I don't expect him to be exposed on the penalty kill at all. So they'll just ask him to, you know, be a safety valve and not try to do too much and just try to stick to the system. I know that's a boring answer, but really these guys just need to kind of fill in and give the Blues some minutes and, help them deal with the injuries until they're able to get over them. I think that Bouwmeester should be back in about 3 weeks or so. And when that happens and when Alexander Steen comes back, you'll have to make a couple of decisions because a couple of guys will have to go out. But, you know, for Vince Dunn right now, I think it'll be play with Bortuzzo. Kind of the same thing as Bortuzzo. Don't try to do too much. Try to take care of your goaltender. Try to play responsibly in your own end. And, you know, he's looked good in camp. So I think he's ready for it. And certainly I think the rest of the Blues defensive core and the experience they have, even with some of the young guys, will certainly pay off in that respect as well.
Injuries and players leaving have made going into this opening game and through the preseason games has made these forward lines they're a little dicey in places, and some of the combinations make Blues fans kind of maybe a little nervous. But as you look at kind of the expected lines, especially the first two or three, I mean, is Yao getting it right? Is he getting the right groupings of guys out there to maximize his firepower and spread it around?
Yeah, I think they've liked what they've had so far. Again, there is some inexperience, I guess, but, you know, this team started Ivan Barbashev on their top line in the Western Conference semifinals last year with Vladimir Tarasenko. So I don't think they're afraid of any of the youth. I think that, you know, again, these guys played in some really, really big spots last year. Guys like Barbashev and Payarvi and Dmitry Yashkin. So I think that they're, you know, comfortable with that. I think that, you know, outside of the top line, Stastny, Sobotkin, Tarasenko that they had this morning, you know, I like to see what Braden Schenn's going to do with Jaden Schwartz. Dmitry Yashkin was great in the postseason. I thought Oscar Sundquist has been an NHL player. He'll play with Payarvi and Thompson. And then you basically return the same fourth line of Brodziak, Upshaw, and then Chris Thorburn, who's sliding in to take Ryan Reeves' place. So I don't think there's too much concern there. Obviously, you'd love to have Alexander Steen back. You'd love to have Robbie Fabry, and it'll be great to get hopefully a healthy Patrick Berglund in the second half of the year. But, you know, these are all young players who have playoff experience and, you know, in some cases have really, really big time playoff experience over the last year or two. And I think when you add Braden Schenn into the mix, you know, especially with what you expect he'll be able to do on the power play, then, you know, you feel pretty good about where you are.
Well, and that's where we head next is the special teams, power play, penalty killing, and that niggly thing that the Blues struggled with last year, and that was faceoffs. How did the Blues do, the Blues organization do, Chris, in shoring up, especially the power play and winning faceoffs, especially in their own end?
You know, I think the power play, I think it's hard to maybe evaluate just because of the loss of Kevin Shattenkirk and what that did to you system-wise. I'm really excited to see how the unit looks this year because it's essentially a brand-new unit. With Petrangelo out there, with Braden Schenn, who had 17 power play goals, on a Philadelphia team that wasn't very good on the power play, wasn't as good as the Blues in the power play last year, hopefully creating some space for Vladimir Tarasenko, and then Colton Parayko, hopefully setting up at the blue line and just teeing off on the second unit. When the playoffs ended last year, Parayko went to the Worlds and played for Team Canada and was unbelievable on the power play. It was just, you know, lighting up the score sheet. And I think that there's reason to be excited for both of those. As far as the faceoffs go, you know, you've just got to be better. Paul Stastny was hurt for much of the second half of last year, and I know that affected his, you know, ability to win faceoffs, especially in the postseason. Vladimir Sobotko was added to the mix very, very, very late. He's a good faceoff guy, so you hope that, again, he's better and is able to, you know, win some draws for you this year. So, yeah, you hope that you're better, and you know, more than anything, I think when it comes, especially to the power play, is, God, you just hope you stay healthy because I'm not sure how many more significant injuries this club could sustain right now.
I was going to say, so far, that hasn't been really a successful run, trying to stay healthy. It seems like it's been a bit of a challenge for these Blues.
Well, no injuries the last couple days.
Oh, man. Find your block of wood, folks, and knock
I'm
on
not,
it. Right?
I'm not hurt.
Okay. All right. Well, how are you good at skating backwards?
Not really. I can skate. You know what? Skating backwards, I'm definitely better than stopping. So,
okay. Well, yeah, that's what the walls are for, I found.
They're curved. They're curved. You'll be fine. You just keep going around. It's fine.
I didn't kill myself on the ice at the Winter Classic.
Okay, well, that's good. That is really good. All right, Chris Raby, KMOX Radio, the Blues Radio Network as well here in pregame, postgame, in between periods. You excited about this season? What?
I am. Okay. I am. And, you know, I think it's kind of funny. Like, I never do prognostications or predictions. You know, I'm not the guy who in, you know, July is going through the NFL schedules trying to pick the record of every team through 17 weeks. But it surprised me a little bit that a lot of people that do that, and a lot of media types are picking the Blues to finish, you know, fifth or sixth in the division in front of, in some cases, only the Avalanche. It's, you know, a team that I think is better in terms of personnel for the style of play that they want to play than they were last year. I think that while the division is tough, I'm excited to see what this team does under a full season of Mike Yeo and some of the assistants that they've brought in, whether it be the guys who have come up from Chicago and know the young players really well or someone like Steve Ott. And also, I'm really excited about the building. I don't know, you know, when your listeners or, you know, folks in your neck of the woods will get a chance to make their way up to St. Louis and check out Scott Trade Center, whether it's for a Blues game or bragging rights, you know, or eventually maybe the SEC tournament in the spring. But the building, guys, just looks great. With the first phase of the renovation done, and I'm biased because I work over there, but with the first phase of the renovation done, the video board, a picture that I've seen didn't do justice for when I actually walked into the lower bowl. It blew me away. The lighting is great. The new ice plant and the, you know, foundation under the ice is great. New sound system, new dressing room facilities for the club, new auxiliary locker rooms that, you know, will be used for various basketball tournaments and events, and media space and meeting space downstairs. So they did an incredible job in just a couple of months on that building, even with some of the BS that goes on in the city of St. Louis in terms of politics and grandstanding and having 98,000 aldermen for a town of, you know, a population of a fraction of that, all bickering. I give the Blues ownership a whole lot of credit for what they've accomplished and what they're going to accomplish over the next couple of years. They submitted a bid for, you know, the NHL All-Star Game in either 2020 or 2021. So, you know, just from an excitement standpoint, in addition to what's going to be on the ice, I think fans are going to love what they see when they get to Scott Trade Center.
All righty. Tonight, 7 o'clock, NBC Sports Net on the road against Pittsburgh. Saturday night, 7 o'clock at Scott Trade against Dallas. Chris, thank you for the time, man. I appreciate it. Have a good time, man.
Yeah, and go Mizzou football, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
Basketball starts on the 10th.
Thanks, boys.
All right, thanks, man. We'll be right back.
It's the Closers. Be part of the show now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
I checked the weather, dog, and it's misting just a little bit more vigorously out there. You could call it rain now. So we got that going for you. Be careful on the way home tonight. Make sure you leave plenty of extra space so that you can come to that full and complete stop without using the back bumper of the car in front of you to finish out that stop.
Yeah, it's been so long. There's probably going to be oil and stuff as it rains.
Shimmering
yes.
across the pavement. And plus, it's getting dark a lot earlier.
Yep.
I hate this time of year.
I like this time of year.
Way to be a contrarian.
I'm not a contrarian.
Gosh. Son.
Daughter?
All right, fine. Be that way. Thanks to our guests today. Really do appreciate their time spending it with us. Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com. Head coach John Klein. Cougar soccer women tonight, 7. And then the women and the men on Saturday. Homecoming for the Cougars, 1:30. And then later on in that afternoon for the men, we'll be out on the pitch over at our Marvin Owens soccer field. And also, Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com. Gabe DeArmond, and catch him on Tiger Sidelines. Also, Bill Conley, Rock M Nation.
Turning 10.
I know.
Awesome.
Well, Rock M is not Bill.
Well, sure.
Bill has a much deeper voice than you would expect out of most 10-year-olds.
True.
And then also, Chris Raby from KMOX previewing the Blues season. That opener is tonight. They will take on the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions, the Pittsburgh Penguins. 7 o'clock, the drop of the puck on NBC Sportsnet, and then back home on Saturday evening at Scott Trade. And, man, there's not a lot of opportunities in the October to catch the Blues at home. So if you have not done so, you might want to think about getting on over to the renovated Scott Trade Center. Phase 1, as Chris mentioned, has been completed. So baseball tonight. The National League wild card going. The Arizona Diamondbacks and the Colorado Rockies. 7 o'clock, the start time on ESPN. What do you think?
I think the Diamondbacks have it.
Okay.
Rockies away from home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you checked out on baseball now?
No.
You're like, done.
No, I'm in.
World out. Okay.
I'm in.
All right.
I was taking bribes on Twitter.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw that. Joey Bats is out, by the way.
Right.
Joey Bautista.
Uh-huh.
The Toronto Blue Jays not picking up the option on a guy who struck out a franchise record time this year and only hit 205.
Seems good.
Yeah, seems reasonable. Jay, thank you much, friend.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you all tomorrow. Until then, please be careful out there.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.